Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
Well, good evening, and welcome to Booker T. Washington Speaks, an African-American Family Room Forum. And we hope that all of you who have tuned in via the internet or will be tuning in to hear us and participate via the telephonic connection are having a good Saturday. We're almost in the middle of the first month of 2019, and I hope that the year is getting off to a good start for most of us. I know that it's not getting off to a good start for several hundred million Americans who are not getting paid this week, and that's an unfortunate situation. But for those of you that are doing well, we should all be very thankful and hope that the year continues to be a good one, a prosperous and successful one for everyone. I will begin by, first of all, announcing our topic for tonight. Does the epidemic killings of African-American males and females constitute the need for a presidential declaration of a national emergency? Does the epidemic of the killings of African-American males and females constitute the need for a presidential declaration of a national emergency? If so, what do you believe the President of the United States must do to resolve this national emergency situation? If you believe that the killing of African-American males and females does constitute a national emergency, I'd like to just, before we invite our guests and our panelists to speak, I would like to just give a little background. This is from a website called LegalDictionary.net, and it deals with emergency power, and that includes the concept of declaring a national emergency because of the president's emergency powers. It says in this document, the president of the United States possesses certain powers to act in emergency situations. Though such emergency power is not specifically expressed in the Constitution, the executive branch is designed to be able to act quickly in times of war or national emergency. Because emergency power is not specifically stated in the Constitution, its scope is somewhat limited, typically extending only to situations that compromise or threaten the safety or well-being of the public. To explore this concept, consider the following emergency power definition. As a noun, it is defined as the power granted to or used by a public authority to meet emergency needs, such as in case of war or disaster. And then the article on the LegalDictionary.net website goes on to say that the U.S. Constitution grants to various branches of the federal government specific authority or powers referred to in the Constitution as express powers. Because it is impossible to predict every situation that may come up requiring action by the government, it has been held that the Constitution implies certain powers, including the presidential Congress, in the event of certain emergencies. It is believed that the framers of the Constitution, and I say it is believed based on what I'm reading, but I can only expect that they mean it is believed by the majority of jurists, people schooled in constitutional law and constitutional philosophy, that it is believed that the framers of the Constitution intended this type of action as the executive branch of the government was designed to be able to act much more quickly than Congress. Then it goes on to say that throughout U.S. history, presidential use of emergency powers has justified a wide variety of emergency orders. Such presidential use of emergency power has stepped in to avert or act in the face of anything from war to natural disasters and even to avoid wide-scale financial ruin. And he gives an example of the use of these emergency powers. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt invoked the use of emergency power during World War II when he issued Executive Order 9066. And apparently that's the form that the implementation of emergency power would take, which is the issuance of an executive order. But the order demanded that all Japanese Americans living on the West Coast at the time of the order be put into internment camps after Congress had declared war. Because war had been declared, which declaration can only be made by Congress, the Supreme Court decided, in the case of Korematsu versus the United States, this was a Japanese, I don't know the case, but this was a Japanese that sued the United States. And the Supreme Court decided in this case that the executive order was correctly made in the interest of public safety. Then it goes on to say that during the Korean War, a labor strike slowed down production of steel, which in turn put a halt to production of much needed equipment and military weapons. President Harry Truman called upon emergency power to seize private steel mills that were not producing enough steel, arguing that the United States could not successfully wage a war without sufficient materials to keep the military forces properly equipped. In the case of Youngstown Sheet and Tube Company versus Sawyer, the Supreme Court ruled that no power of the commander-in-chief nor emergency power gave the president the power to seize private property without approval of Congress. So in this case, Congress said the president acted in contravention to the spirit of the Constitution. But then it goes on to say that Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution gives Congress the power to declare war and gives to the president the power to direct military forces accordingly once war has been declared. Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution also names the president as commander-in-chief. During times of conflict, Congress and the president are supposed to cooperate, but instances have occurred in which the president has used military forces without the consent of Congress. Such situations include the Korean War, the Vietnam War, and Operation Desert Storm. The use of emergency powers in these situations has brought about a great deal of controversy, as some politicians believe that as commander-in-chief, the president has the authority to use the military even when Congress does not consent. Opponents believe that the powers of the president should be limited and that acting without congressional approval is going too far. And we're going to wrap this up in just a second. I just want to read this last part. During states of emergency, such as natural disasters or periods of civil unrest, the government can use implied powers. And here, speaking of the executive branch of the government, namely meaning the president, can use implied powers to formally declare a state of emergency. Such a declaration allows suspension or change in functions of any branch of government and gives the government the power to suspend certain rights or freedoms normally guaranteed by the Constitution. And it says in the United States, a local leader, such as a city mayor or state governor, has the power to declare a state of emergency within their own jurisdiction. The U.S. president has the authority to declare a state of emergency in circumstances in which the country is faced with large-scale disaster or danger. And we'll stop right there. There's more, including a part about abuse of emergency powers. But we will just stop right there, and we want to say welcome to those who joined us. Mr. Bianchi, welcome to you, our veteran panelists. We certainly are happy that you're with us tonight. And as we always like to ask you, how are you doing? How has your day been?
Well, I'm down south where the temperature has been about 65, so it's nice. Back in the Midwest, they have snow about 3 feet deep.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, we're lucky here. It's been sunny most of the weekend. It was a little bit overcast and cloudy today, but it's been relatively warm these last few days since it cleared up. We had some rain earlier in the month, but now it's looking like we're going to have a little dry weather, and it's nice and warm. It looks like we're going to have an early spring, which I hope that it doesn't mean that they're going to have spring and then another frost and the crops will be going to be hurt, but that's something that we can only hope that everything goes well with nature. But we're certainly doing fine here in Augusta, Georgia, where it's our home. And so it's good to know you're doing fine down in the south. And we've had two others that have joined us. We want to welcome all of you. And we certainly look forward to all of the comments that you will provide. I hope that those who just joined were able to hear some of what we said about the emergency powers of the president. We're not going to go over that again unless we're specifically asked to do so, but we do want to repeat the topic, and then we're going to ask you, Mr. Bianchi, if you'd like to respond to the question, and we'll move from there. Tonight's topic is, does the epidemic of the killings of African-American males and females constitute the need for a presidential declaration of a national emergency? That's the first part. The second part, if so, if you believe that it does, what do you believe that the President of the United States must do to resolve this national emergency situation, if in fact you believe that the killing of African-American males and females does constitute the need for a presidential declaration of a national emergency? So we're going to turn it over to you now, Mr. Bianchi. What are your thoughts on that, sir?
Well, I say no. I say that the killings would stop naturally after you kill off enough.
Mr. Bianchi, you know, we've been co-panelists on this show for 2 years. And I have to say I'm kind of smiling behind the screen now because I know you aren't serious. Are you?
Yes, I am, too, because I'm going to tell you, once enough of the people that's out there doing this killing kill up each other, it'll stop, and you can see places where it has done that. Some cities, the killing, murders, as compared to the year before, has went down. Why? Because nobody left in the city that's indulging in those type of activities. I mean, think about it. How the president, first place, that's not the president's responsibility. That's local responsibility. And the way policing is done, police usually is called after the effect. So after something goes down that will cause people to call the police and they get their things already done. So there's no way that you're going to call an emergency to get in the minds and hearts of people. Well, where would that ever stop? I mean, think about it. But when you look at the murder rate for 2018 compared to 2017, 2016, well, they have went down. Why is that? Well, because the people that was engulfed in those activities are no longer. Look at your schools. The population of your schools has decreased to the point where in some school districts in inner cities, they close upwards of 48 to 50 school buildings. Why? Because there's no more children to go to the school buildings. So that's just that's just a fact. That's just the way it works.
Well, I have to say that that's definitely an interesting perspective. And certainly if there are no more killers roaming around, there will be no more people, black, white, yellow, or red, or brown, or whatever, being killed. Of course, we also have to realize that, according to the statistic that today, only 46% of the killing of black people are done by black people. So that means the majority of the killing of black people, according to this statistic, are not being done by black people. So if we go with that, I'm not saying we have to go with that, but if we go with that statistic, and I'm looking for it, I had saved it on my computer, I'm looking for the source, but let's just, for the purpose of the conversation right now, stipulate that it is a correct statistic, and if I find that it's from an invalid source, I'll correct that position. But if it is a correct statistic, that means that if 54% of the killing of black people is not done by black people, does that mean that other people besides black people need to kill themselves off too to keep black people from
It must be Martians or people coming from Jupiter, Marshall, because in the community that I know of, there's no white folks killing no blacks. I mean, can you name one? So those stats are wrong. Where is the argument that we always hear when people try to include black-on-black crime into the argument? Well, then you have those who say, well, people in a community is going to kill each other. That's what they say. All right. You hear stats say that communities are more segregated now than ever before. They surely say that by schools. The NAACP said that public schools are more segregated today than they were back in 1954. So I have problems with those, whoever made their report.
Again, I was looking for the source, and I'll probably find it, but I just stipulated, just for the purpose of keeping the conversation going, that it was valid. Now, Donald Trump, according to another report, said that something like 96% of the killings of black people were done by black people. And again, I don't know where he got his data from either. But the truth of the matter is that it's probably unlikely in our lifetimes anyway that the killers are going to kill each other off. And so if that doesn't happen, is there anything that can be done, any intervention that can be done to kind of reduce this killing epidemic, do you think?
No, like I said before, when individuals get done taking each other's life, won't be anybody else to take life unless you legalize whatever it is that they're fighting over. But normally, I tell you what, go to Google and Google shootings in St. Louis.
Okay,
and then they
I'm
show
good.
A homicide. it show a homicide map. You ain't gonna see no white folks killing nobody in St. Louis City, cause there aren't any.
Yeah.
And then when they move the people, blacks out of North St. Louis over into South St. Louis, where it used to be, you know, about 99% white, whites leave. And now the demographics have changed. So people have been talking about this forever. I'm sure that if there were some solutions, the solutions would have taken care of the problem before it's still being talked about today. And people outside of those groups, they're not going to waste their time trying to come up with solutions, especially if it's going to cost money and time on somebody else that they compete against or don't want them competing against them. It just don't make any logic. So that solution is going to have to fall on blacks themselves. And many of them are trying to implement it by means of education, by means of flight. There's moves where many of them want to have the ability to put their child in school systems where they won't be trapped in a paradigm that leads nowhere. So you can't say that the efforts haven't been tried. But you got to think about this too. Amongst all that, somebody's making money. Politicians are making some sort of money because they are asked to put some program in place that has benefits one way or the other, either through campaign contributions from corporations or businesses that's used to implement the program. You know that teachers' unions strive off of it because the teachers have their job no matter what the outcome of the quality of the students that's coming out of the school system. So the only other option is sooner or later, when enough people have come to their demise, it won't be many to cause those problems. And you can see that all the time.
Good evening. Can I say something?
Look at gentrification. What did that do?
Hold on. Go ahead. Finish up, Mr. Bianca.
Yeah, that's what I say. Look at gentrification. We like to always associate. Look at your inner cities. Look at Detroit, for instance. There's no blacks that fled. Those that could fled. So now you have acres and acres, plots and plots of vacant lots. So those people are gone. So if there's no people there in that city, then quite natural, those that was indulged in that type of activity is not going to be there either. They're not going to have anybody to kill. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Now, before we bring you on, Sister Baena, there was another person who had actually joined the show a little bit before you did, and we want to invite them to speak. I do want to repeat for those that may be listening via the internet that just came on, I just want to repeat the topic, and then we'll ask our guests from the 443 area code if they would like to comment. The topic is, does the epidemic of the killings of African-American males and females constitute the need for a presidential declaration of a national emergency? Does the epidemic of the killings of African-American males and females, the need for a presidential declaration of a national emergency? If so, if you believe that, what do you believe the President of the United States must do to resolve this national emergency situation? And so we want to invite our guest, who's from the 443 area code, the last 3 digits of your phone number are 469. Would you like to comment on the topic itself or what our previous speaker, Mr. Pianke, had to say? You are.
Hey, Mr. Cabin. Mr. Cabin, how you doing?
Sir,
this is Calvin Nobles. I dialed into your show tonight.
of Calvin Nobles, my dear friend, fraternity brother. I'm so happy that you joined us. You heard the topic. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts on the first question you asked is that should the killing of Afro-Americans and Afro-American men and women be a state of national emergency? And the answer is no to that. And here's why. It's just that when we start looking at killings, typically we want to look at our own community. But we have to look at all the communities. And, I mean, we got a lot of communities of different nationalities and ethnic groups in this country, so we will always be under a state of national emergency if we were to take that approach. However, I do disagree with the first caller in saying that people are killing off each other. I don't necessarily agree with that. I do. Unfortunately, we do have a lot of people of color, men and women, that have been killed and that are still being killed. But it's not a matter of a national emergency. What we really need in this country is police reform. Now, the president can call for police reform and put together a task force and other resources to help states with police reform. Because if you look at other countries, they have far fewer killings than we do, and they still, have the same violent situation with very large populations, and in some cases larger than what we have in the United States. And when we start talking, however, before we get into the police reform, we got to understand policing issues starts before the crime in the communities. The policing issue is really the last resort. So if you want to talk about cleaning up a community, you didn't got to bring in resources and programs for the people in those communities. So as people of color, we have to go out to our local governments and our local politicians and ask and demand for programs in our communities just like they have in the other communities. So because at the end of the day, it really is about resources. I mean, if you look at a lot of our minority men don't graduate from high school, so they resort to doing things that they see other men in the community doing. If we can give these young men education and jobs, then we can drive and we can change that. Because what's happening, a lot of them are ending up in a penal system because they don't have the basic needs to sustain their life. And that's what I feel like is one of the major problems, is that these young men have fallen off the path, and they just resort to doing criminal activity as a means of survival. So I think that's what we have to do. We have to demand things for our communities so that we can see the crime rates in our community drop. Because at the rate we're going right now, there really is no need for Caucasians to come in and do gentrification. It's happening naturally, like in the city of Detroit. I mean, if you look at it, J.P. Morgan Chase came into the city of Detroit and invested millions of dollars. At the end of the day, the people that's going to be left out and hurt the most are going to be the Afro-Americans, because we know what Detroit means to us from our traditions and from our history and from our culture, but we're going to end up losing the city of Detroit just like we lost the city of Washington, D.C. Like over in the southeastern portion of Washington, D.C., used to be predominantly minority, crime-infested. Now it's where they built the baseball stadium and the $1 million condos. So these are things we have to have a grandeur perspective on, so that we could drive change in our community.
Thank you. That is, for those of you who are listening, that is Dr. Calvin Nobles, a very dear friend of mine, and we certainly are glad you joined us tonight with those very insightful comments, and I hope that you'll stay on just a while longer. We're going to just be on for another approximately 20 minutes, and there may be some that may want to respond to your comments, so if you could stay with us for a little while longer. Ms. Baina, we're going to go ahead now and give you the microphone, but we did want to go in the order that came on. So what do you
think? Oh, what I wanted to say is that people need to really understand what a state of calamity is, first of all, and that's pretty much what we're saying is a national emergency situation, is when you have a calamity of some type, a disaster, civil unrest or armed conflict, some kind of warlike state that's going on in the community, extreme violence and aggression, which we have, and is widespread, is nationwide. We have widespread physical violence and clashes with the police department daily with African-American people. So now the root cause, as far as I can see, is all about that prison industrial complex and how this country brought African-American people here, or black people, or whatever, we don't even call them that. They didn't have to be black. We're just going to say, you know, people of slave descent were brought here to be a permanent resource for these people, income. And so now we have this prison industrial complex that's fueled, that this government is feeling very threatened by right now. And pretty much, as far as Donald Trump is concerned, he's giving the okie doke. It's okay for you to go out there and kill and beat and mutilate people. Just keep these people in line so we can keep these people locked up. Lock them up for whatever you can lock them up for, because you're making money off of us. You're making money off of us. You don't see us as human beings. Black people are not seen as human beings. We're seen as a resource to keep these people. The prison industrial complex, they have people behind bars. They're running factories out of the prisons now. Most of the prisons are privatized. They do reading scores for second graders every year nationwide to let them know how many more prisons they need to build. You're not educating people anymore. You're miseducating people. So, yes, we have a national emergency situation here, okay? We have widespread physical violence, and I don't expect Donald Trump to do anything about it. The man is – something is wrong with him. He's been totally dehumanized. He's a materialist. That's all he knows is materialism. He's ego tripping right now. As far as I can see, what he's saying to the whole society is, hey, make America great again. Let's have slavery all over again, because you got people working for the federal government right now for free. That's slavery. Those are the only people I know that work for free are slaves. So in other words, you're telling everybody in America, you're a slave now. Yes, we have a problem. We have widespread physical violence. And as far as I can see, maybe he's trying to incite rioting or civil unrest so he can declare martial law. That way he can ensure that his rich friends' prisons will be full of prisoners and they can continue to make money off of those people who are prisoners' families and collect money for the federal government. Yes, but I don't expect him to do anything to reform anything. He can't even run this government. Who's running the government? Not him. All he's doing, he thinks he's on a reality show. I think he thinks he's still on TV. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay. We had another caller who just dropped off. And so we're going to probably wrap up very soon. I was hoping the other caller would stay on long enough so we could hear her comment. But we've heard from Dr. Nobles and Ms. Bianchi, and I basically did not give an opinion. I just reviewed some information concerning the national emergency issue, the emergency powers provision of the U.S. Constitution. But I suppose that I will go against my normal policy and give an opinion. I usually try to stay neutral and let the panel just talk over the period of time that we have to talk about the issue. But here's the opinion. First of all, we have to understand that there are some serious root causes for the situation. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go with Donald Trump's figures, not because I have any valid backup, but just because of what I see happening right here in this southern middle-sized community in which I live in Augusta, Georgia. When I hear about black people being killed in Augusta, Georgia, mind you, the sheriff of the county, which this is a city-county administration under one commission and with one sheriff. When I hear about black youths particularly being killed, It's not white people killing them. It's not white police killing them. It's not black police killing them. It's black young people killing other black young people. And I had this sad experience about 2 years ago, without going into a lot of detail, of having one of my dear friends, as a matter of fact, Dr. Noble's a fraternity brother, who you may not have met. He probably had left the area before you came here, but his cousin, who he had raised, actually it was his nephew, pardon me, who he had raised because the father deserted the family. I don't even know if he was still living when this incident happened, but the mother of the young man was the sister of my dear friend and fraternity brother. And this was the night of the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And my fraternity brother's nephew had been entertaining some friends at his house watching the game and had decided to leave to go to the nearby store to get some more refreshments, or so I heard. And Judy, please stay on. I want to hear your comment. I'm glad you came back. But let me finish this. When the nephew went to the store, he ran into someone who he had some business dealings with. Apparently, they got into a heated argument about the business dealing. It was about some money being owed. And so my friend's nephew decided to pull off and go on back home with his guests and watch the rest of the game. He never made it back home because when he got in his car, this other person got in the car, just opened the door, got in the car with him, and shot him to death. And this young man was in his 30s. He had a child and another one on the way. And now here are two fatherless children and a widow because of black-on-black crime.
What is going on?
Okay. Judy, I just wanted to go about that just to wait for you to come back, hopefully, and you have come back. Miss Becker, just a minute. Could you hold on just a second? Let Judy say something. She's been waiting for it just a minute. Judy, have you got a comment? Would you like to respond?
I would just like to say good evening. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah, we hear you. Go ahead, Judy.
Right. I apologize. I had a call coming in. I had to hang up, but I didn't hear. I'm just joining the show. The only thing that I heard was the sister talking about the mass incarceration. I heard a lot of her comments, but I don't quite know what the topic is.
Let me tell you what the topic is, Judy. The topic is, does the epidemic of the killings of African-American males and females constitute the need for a presidential declaration of a national emergency? Does the epidemic of the killings of African-American males and females constitute the need for a presidential declaration of a national emergency? And if one agrees that it does, if so, what do you believe the President of the United States must do to resolve this national emergency situation? So did you get that? That is the topic.
Wow, that's a pretty heavy topic, and I do apologize for interrupting, kind of coming in at the last minute. I don't know. I did want to comment, first of all, about what I heard the sisters speaking about as far as mass incarceration, and I just wanted to add a quick follow-up to that, her presentation, and that is, I really would advise any of those listening who've not seen the movie 13th, and it's dealing with the 13th Amendment. That's the name. The title is taken from that, but it's basically it's a documentary about mass incarceration and the privatization of prisons. It is a must-see movie, a documentary. You can see it on Netflix or look it up, as far as saying it. It really, really breaks down how vested, how so many companies now, what was mind-boggling and really just mind-blowing about the whole statistics and facts that were revealed in this documentary was they pointed out all of the different companies, or so many of the companies that are vested in the privatization of prisons. And once you really finish listening to the documentary and they did some awesome research, you would realize at this point that, you know, you understand why so many people are, so many black males are being locked up, and why there's so much attacks on our males. And you mentioned the third grade. I know that Dr. Umar Johnson talks about the third grade reading scores, and several people have various private prisons now use that for the, do the bed count based on the reading score of the third graders, is what I've been told, third graders. But I think in trying to answer the question as best that I can, trying to comprehend that question, I just find it almost, it's not very realistic with the president that we have today, currently, that we're going to get any kind of state of emergency when he's doing everything he can now to show that he's actually with support, in my mind, he's supporting that kind of behavior. Because he's doing so many things, I mean, that's going a little far, but so many other aspects of our society are under attack. I would find it very, almost a joke to even think that he would consider putting out anything and has any regard or any care and would do any, take any actions that would protect African-American males or females, youth being killed. So, I mean,
okay,
that's kind of what... Yeah, I mean, and I may not be quite answering that exactly to support the discussion that's been taking place, but I'm just coming in trying to catch up.
Okay, well, let me just say this, and I'm going to turn it back over to Mr. Bianchi because he wanted to say something, and I'm going to ask Dr. Knowles if he wants to respond, and then Sifraina, because we're right in the zone now where we're doing our last wrap-up comments, and we're going to be closing out in about 9 minutes. But Judy, the main question actually was, does the epidemic of the killings of African-American males and females constitute the need for a presidential declaration of a national emergency? Not whether or not he's going to actually be willing to do anything, but does the epidemic constitute the need for something?
Well, I mean, yes, of course. I would have to say yes to that. I think, yeah, there is a need and there is a crisis that we're dealing with, and there is an attack, and, you know, I would look at it as, in a sense, genocide. So in a white supremacist system, I don't know. That's why I don't think it's very realistic. I think, yes, the answer is yes. I think there is a need.
Okay, thank you. Now, before we get down to the last 5 minutes, I do want to give Ms. Bianchi the mic back. Ms. Bianchi, I'm sorry I had to ask you to hold up, but Judy, just come back on the line.
From 1973 to 2003, black women aborted 19 million black babies in 30 years. That's at the rate of 50 per hour. Think about that. 50 per hour. How long are you going to be on the night? Of course, it has dropped down, and rightfully so. Ain't nobody left to be aborted. But for every hour you own, 50 black babies are aborted. 50 black people are not getting killed on the street per hour. So which is the greater concern if you really want to cause a national emergency or causing it, say it's an emergency? Another point, that thing, that myth about prison beds are determined by the number of kids that can't read by the third grade is just that, a myth. And that's in, then even so, why come people in these communities, in these school districts, are not putting programs in place, going to the schools and tutoring to help the kids learn how to read? It's very easy. So if the people themselves don't handle the problem, guess what? They want somebody else to handle the problem. And let me ask you a question. Marshall, if you was going to go to a school and take books to help kids learn how to read, what kind of books would you take? Give me a title of one. I mean, just for this example.
Okay, that's a good question. Well, to be honest with you, since I am promoting my book, I would take my book. Okay, I'm serious.
All right. Okay, let's go with that.
I'd like my book to be able to be read by anybody from the third grade.
Well, let me give you an example. You would go with your books. Other people would go with quote-unquote black books. Well, in these schools, you know who's coming in to help these kids read? You have white groups coming in to help these kids read. And they're going to bring in books like The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. They're going to bring in the books like Tom Sawyer. They're going to bring in their own books. They're not going to be teaching black kids how to read with books that's talking about what allegedly they done to put blacks in this pseudo position that they're in. So if it's a problem that kids that can't read by the third grade is going to end up in prison based on those numbers, how many beds are going to be produced, then you need to solve the problem yourself. Another point, you talk about these prisons being private. The reason why come they went to that method, because private industry run businesses better than governments do. One can just merely look back to the Transcontinental Railroad. When Congress tried to control Union Pacific and Pacific Central, it was a total disaster. Governments cannot run businesses better than private concerns. And another point, in all the concerns that's involved in prison, Correction Corporation of America, GEO out of Florida, those are publicly traded companies. Anybody on this line can have stock in them. And you probably do have stock in them. Why is that? Because Vanguard, BlackRock, Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, Trump Holdings, South Africa, teachers' pension plans, police pensions plans, your 401ks, and more invest in those corporations. And why is that? Because they give a high return for the investment. You want your future pensions to be invested in something that's not returning a high return? So if you do, your pension holders, your money managers is going to be taking your money and they're going to be investing in these prisons because they give a high rate of return.
Okay.
And the same thing with those police, the same thing with those kneeling football players. Their investments are also handled by these money managers. And their money, along with that of the Fraternal Order of Police, are being invested in these same avenues. My goodness, do people understand how this stuff works? The police, okay. The President of the United States have nothing to do with your local police department. That's your concern, community. Gentrification is good. Why? Because it takes property, land that's not productive, that's not attractive, where people have fled, there's no school, and it turns it into just the opposite. It turns it into ideal situation where people want to come and live. And blacks also are involved in development. It's just not whites. It's just not Japanese. I know of a lot of black developers, not a lot, but I know of black developers that's developing areas that have went south, if you want to say that. So no, that's all these things have to be taken in consideration. I mean, it's very simple. Trump has nothing to do with that. Obama, Jimmy Carter had nothing to do with that.
Okay.
Thank you, Marshall.
We appreciate that. Now we want to ask Dr. Novus. I know you've been waiting patiently. You stayed with us, and I asked you to, and you did stay with us. So would you we're getting ready to wrap up. We're just going to go through the list of people on the line and give everyone an opportunity to make a statement while we wrap up. So would you like to comment on what Ms. Bianchi or Judy or Sister Baena or I said or anything else you'd like to add?
Just a real quick comment here. You know, when I sit and I listen to some great commentary tonight from everybody raising some very interesting points. Because we all, you know, even though we might be people of color, we are from different communities with different, you know, community needs. And I would tell you, one of the institutions that used to be of significance to us of people of color, especially blacks, that is losing power every day, and it's been eroding over decades, and that is the black church. The voice of the black church used to be extremely significant and powerful. Now the church is just something that we do on Sunday. The ministries of the churches are no longer there, you know, because, for instance, like the gentleman said about reading, to be honest, like I tell a lot of people, the training and the reading and the basic development of a child starts at home. When that child goes to kindergarten, that child does not know his or her colors. That's an indicative of what's going on in that child's environment. And so that's what we have to start paying attention to, is the basic needs of these kids at home, our kids in our community. And by the And they get left so far behind in so many aspects. And so the church itself can be such a powerful institution and after-school programs to teach our kids how to read, to teach illiterate adults how to read, to give us basic functioning, you know, that we're going to need in life. To me, I've just been so disappointed in our black churches, and I just leave it at that.
Okay, Dr. Calvin Nobles, thank you so much. I'm so glad you joined us tonight. And we certainly appreciate your very, very insightful and clearly stated comment. I want to turn it back to Sister Baena for a final comment. Would you like to submit?
Yes.
You go right ahead.
I want to respond to you talking about the abortions that people were having. Who's enabling that? Who's enabling that, first of all? And then I want to just say that a national emergency situation or a state of calamity is something that's empowered. It's empowered, okay? You can rationalize and use any kind of pretext for the reality is that black people of slave descent in America, we do not have the same rights as other people in this country. We're still classified as 3/5 of a human being in that constitution. Therefore, our rights have been suspended. Our freedoms are not guaranteed like other people. We haven't received any reparations like all these other people, or Japanese and Native Americans or whatever, for what we've done. And basically, we're the ones that we built this country. And you have the nerve to talk about people having abortions? Who's benefiting from that? The pharmaceutical companies, the cosmetics companies are benefiting from that. The rich people are still benefiting from it. Okay? The Constitution, basic law in this country right here, it doesn't apply to black people of slave descent, sir. Now, I don't know where you live, but if you don't know, why don't you just go out there and... No, I'm not even going to go there. We still have widespread physical violence and clashes every day with the police department because we are not respected as human beings. We're still classified as 3/5 of a human being. But until that's changed, nothing's going to change. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Baena. And now our final comment, because we've reached the top of the hour. And we
no, you didn't want to hear my final comment.
No, we want you to go ahead. We're at the end of the show, so you can be the last one, and then we'll go
ahead.
I'm
going to keep it brief. Mr. Bianchi, I was just going to say, as Baena mentioned, anybody in my mind who would compare women having, black women having abortion in the same vein as our children being killed on the streets. And, I mean, that's so insensitive. And so I'm just appalled, honestly. I can't believe it. But also, to make the comment of privatization of prisons being something as if the products, that the reason the people who are being incarcerated are mostly just us. So when you say that you think there's nothing wrong with privatizing prisons, because why wouldn't they want to? When you don't see the commodity and the stock is modern day slavery. And I dare you to go and see the movie 13th. Maybe you'll come back with a different understanding, but I'm not sure that you will. I'm amazed. There needs to be more people on the call who could actually come, you know, combat you with more statistics. But anyway, good night, Marshall, and thank you, everybody. That's my comment.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give the final comment to Judy. I'm going to give the final comment. I usually don't do this, but I think there's something still in the air that would probably provoke some discussion that may be argumentative. And so I'm going to give the final comment. Let me say this. First of all, I've actually been in a situation where I witnessed what could have been black-on-black killing. Fortunately, the bullet did not go into the torso of the individual. It only went into his arm. Fortunately, it just hit the fleshy part of the arm. And when I performed first aid, there was no real major damage because that part of the arm didn't even bleed that much. There was no artery or major vein that was hit. It could have been much worse. That person that I actually administered first aid to in a black park, a black recreational park, was very fortunate. I think about all the young people that go out to these parks and because of gang-related or jealousy or whatever, crime, they don't come home. That young man, after I wrapped him up, told him to go to the doctor or to the hospital as soon as possible, get himself checked out, but he was not in a triage situation where we had to call an ambulance. That was a fortunate situation. But there are many who aren't that fortunate. Now, another situation, and I've never told anybody about this. My wife doesn't even know about this. But some years ago, I happened to see the results of an abortion in a public housing project. A fetus was laying on the ground that some woman had ejected from her body. The fetus was not moving, so apparently the fetus had died just because it was exposed like that. Now, somebody may say, well, did you call the police? Well, I did not call the police. I did not. And I didn't even prepare because I said somebody's going to have to do something about this, but I didn't call the police. But I felt very bad that this little potential life had been ejected lifeless, or maybe living, from that woman's uterus. So I have to say that it does hurt me to know that so many of our women are taking what can be considered to be the easy way out of their own activities, results by using whatever methods are now available to cause these fetuses to be ejected from their wombs. And that is, to me, black-on-black crime, no doubt in my mind about it. And so we have people shooting each other. We have women that are murdering their babies, because when that baby's put in a mother's womb, that's God's child. That's God's creation. And when a woman decides to take it upon herself to kill that baby by ejecting that baby to be laying out in the dirt or in a trash can or a toilet somewhere, that's, to me, just the same. Some may disagree, and I've seen somebody dropped off because they didn't want to hear this, but I'm just going to close on that note. That's my feeling. Okay. But anyway, as far as the national emergency is concerned, I think it is a national emergency. I think that that is a very serious problem of these abortions, of these black-on-black killings, and I think that at the top of the ladder, the churches are not going to take action. then the national government needs to look at this as a national problem, even though it's just one part of our society. It's an important part of our society that the national leadership needs to work with some leaders to address. I know there may be others that want to speak, but I don't want to keep the conversation going because I got a feeling it may become an argument, and that's not what we want to do here tonight. But we want to thank everyone. I hope that I didn't leave you too unsatisfied by not getting your point back in there. But I got a feeling that we probably ought to stop right now on this. But thank you so much for participating. Don't let the fact that I didn't give you a chance to make a comeback discourage you. But there is a time when it's always better to just say, everyone, thank you for coming to the party, and we're going to go ahead and say goodnight. So thank you again.